As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Coming up on episode 242 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Mini Cooper SE. We drive the Hyundai Santa Cruz, the Mercedes-Benz EQE, the new Toyota BZ4X, and the GMC Hummer EV, and Cruise AV gets pulled over in San Francisco. All that and more coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 242 of Wheel Bearings. I am Sam Abual-Samet of Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakelin of, let's say, Kelly Blue Book today.
And I am Roberto Baldwin of Forged Wheels.
And let's start with you, Roberto. What have you been driving? What have you been playing with?
I have been driving so many things, but here are the things I'm going to talk about. I drove the brand new, I was going to say Mazda, I don't know why, Mercedes-Benz EQE.
Same thing. They both start with M, right?
Start with an M. I have a little bit of jet lag. I went all the way to Europe, to Germany, to drive the new Mercedes-Benz EQE. They're not as fancy as an S-Class. E-Class version of the EQ lineup.
But it looks just nice. Like an S-Class.
It does. You know, okay, so here's the weird thing. So we fly over there, get there, and we look.
How does flying go again?
Except for 15 hours.
It's a long time to be making that sound effect.
It is. It's just like such a lot. We get there and you look at it, and it's the same design language as the EQS. It looks like just a smaller version of the EQS. Yet for some reason, it looks actually nicer because it's smaller, that design. You just kind of have to see it in person. I think it looks a bit nicer, that design language, on a smaller vehicle.
Okay.
So there you go. So that's the look thing. I think people either like it. I think I said either they like it or they hate it. I don't think anyone really loves the new design of the EQ. The new EQE. But yeah, it's fine. Whatever. You get inside, it's a Mercedes. It's just like essentially the same as the EQS. It's very fancy. You can get the hyper screen if you want, 56 inches of touchscreen terror. it's got the passenger screen. So if the passenger's watching, I don't know, movie or whatever. And then because the hyperscreen has the in-car monitoring system and has the little camera right there right above the instrument cluster, if you turn to look at it, it'll sort of pause it and be like, hey, You can't watch that. So
it doesn't just it doesn't just have a filter on it. It actually pauses it.
I think so they've put a filter or something. Something happens where you can't see it. They're like, no. So that's cool. I didn't get the chance to try it though because in the time of COVID, we still don't have drive partners. But you know, we only have so much time with these first drive. I got to drive the 300. No, the 350 and the 500. So the 500 is also coming to the United States. It is coming later than the 350, though. 350 will be first, and it'll have just that single portrait screen. It will not have the gigantic hyper screen available when it gets here. But you'll be able to get that later on, and you'll also be able to get the more powerful 500. The 350 is... how you say in your in English, rear-wheel drive is rear-wheel drive only, and the 500 is all-wheel drive 4MATIC. You know, the old Mercedes-Benz 4MATIC. That's just a fancy word for all-wheel drive. The EQE has 288 horsepower, 391 pound-feet of torque, and when you stomp on the gas, it's fine. It's not. It is definitely not a rocket. It's not. I think. I like that more and more vehicles that are EVs, when you stomp on the gas, or I'm sorry, the accelerator, because there is no gas. When you stomp on the accelerator,
the go pedal.
Yeah, it doesn't just jerk your head backwards, because that's fun three times. It's fun for you three times. And then every time a friend gets in the car, you're like, hey, look at this. Woo! But then after a while, you're like, I just want to go from here to here. And so the 350 doesn't have that sort of like, it's just a very nice, very smooth acceleration curve. And especially if you're looking at a luxury car, the EQE is really, really smooth, just driving on the road and very, very quiet. You're just kind of, more sounds, by the way.
That's better than the sound that it took to get over to drive the car in the first place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's much better on the ears. It's far less ear attacking by the outside world when you're driving the EQE as opposed to sitting in a plane flying over the Atlantic Ocean.
I must say, looking at the pictures of the interior right now, the vents on the dashboard look very much like jet engines. Looking in the front of a jet engine.
Yeah, the whole Mercedes-Benz deal now is like making things look like planes on the inside, like little jet engines. All those vents.
They do. It looks kind of awesome, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it looks really cool. And then you get the little accent lighting. You can put it all the different colors. Again, I always pick the peppermint colors. It looks like really cool. I like the hyperscreen in theory. I think it's very nice. It's huge. But the regular screen, it's just without the passenger screen, it's more than adequate. It's huge. It's still huge. You just don't have that other screen over there on the right-hand side. And so the passenger, I don't know, they have to, if they want to do things with the navigation, they have to turn left and use it. I mean, the passenger screen is great if you want to listen to different music than the driver, if you want to watch something, if you want to use the internet but a lot of that stuff, you know what else people have usually is their phone or an iPad.
Yeah, but you don't want to sit there in the car for 3 hours holding your phone in front of you.
That's true.
Or your iPad or, you know, whatever.
It's nice
to just have it there and you can just sit back and relax and
let it wash over me. So, yeah, I guess there's that. So you can do, you know, if you're into that, then you can get the hyperscreen. If you're not into that, then just get the regular screen. You will need the hyperscreen set up, though, if you want to get the augmented reality turn-by-turn flying arrows, because it needs...
Those are cool.
It's very cool. And it's really nice how well it sort of attaches to the road, itself to the road. And it's doing that because it's using, you know, location of your face. Hyundai has the same thing on their vehicles. They have the IONIQ 5 and I think the EV6 also has. Anyway,
yeah, but the system on the Hyundais is not as sophisticated. It doesn't actually move around in space.
Yeah, exactly. Because it doesn't know where your head is. It can't track your eyes. So it's just sort of like, hey, there's a thing coming up and there's the arrows. And it's good, but it's definitely not, like you say, as sophisticated as the Mercedes-Benz version, where it's just like right there. It's all floating. It's all dynamic. It's very, yeah, it's very impressive. So if you want that, then you're gonna need the Hyperscreen. And that's very helpful if you happen to be driving somewhere you have no idea where you are, like a teeny tiny European street, or all the teeny tiny European streets.
You get lost? Is that? Are you telling us you got lost in a teeny tiny European street somewhere?
I missed a turn, and then you have to like do a bunch of things to get like where you need to go. But it's you're like, oh no, I missed a turn. Oh, it's not that big of a deal, actually, to be honest. I think missing a turn while visiting Europe when you had to use a map and like a co-pilot, that's a much tougher,
much more horrifying. Like, oh gosh, we're never.
Yeah, but now you got Google Maps or in car maps. Like everything's like, oh, it's just redirecting it. Because I've driven through Europe before, before smartphones, and you just sort of like, oh, I missed my turn. Oh, hold on, let's look at the map. You just pull over. It takes a little bit longer, but you're still going to get where you're going to get. They haven't shared any information on pricing yet. They haven't shared any information on range. They do have, I think, their WLTP scale, the super generous European scale, says it'll do 660 kilometers per charge, which is about 400 miles per charge. Once the EPA gets a hold of the vehicle, it'll be far less than that. So, don't be looking at that number. It has a 90.6 kilowatt hour capacity battery pack, so you shouldn't be too concerned about how far you're going to be able to drive in this thing. It supports DC fast charging up to 170 kilowatts, which is good but not great. With other companies hitting, up in anything below 200. For a luxury vehicle seems kind of
Mercedes. But Mercedes is still using a 400 volt
architecture.
They're
still using, yeah, exactly. So they're still using 400 volt. Hyundai's doing 800. Hyundai. Just gonna say it again. Hyundai is doing 800. Mercedes is doing 400. Again, it's a Mercedes. You sit in. It's comfortable. It's just, massage seats, all, you can option this thing to the sky and you're going to have a nice time and you're going to be very comfortable. And that's really what the EQE is all about. Just smooth, pristine comfort and quiet. We drove it, they had us drive us through the mountains and, you're like, oh, we're doing some dynamic driving. But you really, you can, but you're just like, oh, this is so nice. Nice and comfortable. You listen to whatever.
It's the next generation German taxi cab.
Yeah, it's the next generation.
For anybody that's never been to Germany, the taxi cabs are all Mercedes E-classes.
Which is the weirdest thing. You're like, here taxi cabs are all like, or Ubers, they're all like junky cars. Like they're like, oh, I'll take my Mercedes taxi. Thank you very much.
pardon me, I'm taking my. And then you get in, and it's we took a taxi while we were in Germany. And every taxi driver is the exact same everywhere in the world. They're always driving incredibly fast. They're always stomping on the gas, stomping on the brake. They don't know how to modulate.
They treat the pedals as on-off switches.
Yeah, everything is binary. It's either all on or all off. All on, all off. Yeah, it's MBUX. Oh, it has a zero layer, which I really like. The MBUX infotainment feature where it's just, here's the map, the thing you need anyway, and then like a few little floating modules that give you information for things you want to use. Whenever I'm using it, I never have to like, I've never find myself using zero layer and being like, oh, I need to find some more information. It's always just like, oh, there it is, in little floaty thingies.
It's right there where you need it. Is the EQE a hatchback like the EQS, or is it
nope,
have a trunk?
It's got a proper trunk. It doesn't have the little hatchback. It's just like, which means it's a little bit tougher to get large things in the trunk.
Yeah, it seems like an odd choice given that it's a little smaller than the S. You would think that it would be the other way around, that the E would be the hatchback and the S would have a trunk because it's bigger.
They gave me a reason and I've completely forgotten it because, I was tired.
That's jet lag.
I'm sure it's in my notes somewhere. They gave me a reason I wrote it down. I don't have it in front of me. But yeah, it just has a regular trunk again, which so you have less room to put things in. I have a number for the storage in the trunk, but they are double checking it. But I'm just going to say it's around 15 cubic feet.
It's fairly typical of a sedan of that size.
It's a little bit bigger than some other vehicles out there. So you get it's a nice trunk, but they're double checking on that. So you can't if that's wrong, don't send me.
It's not your fault.
Emails. Don't send. If you have angry emails, please address them to Sam.
Send them to Sam or something.
What else do we want to know about this vehicle? The 500 is, of course, faster. Dual motor, quicker. All the things that you want. 408 horsepower. Again, it is quicker. It's a bit more sports sedan-esque. But for the reality is that it's again just a nice comfortable ride. Just you need all four wheels turning at once.
Other than bigger numbers are faster. Is there any particular logic to the numbers? Like, do they have any meaning? Like, does it equate to the torque in Newton meters or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
no, there's no logic.
Okay, so the EQE has 288 horsepower. You're like, well, that's not quite. That doesn't. The EQE 350 has 288 horsepower. We're like, well, that's not right. And it has 391 pound feet of torque. I'm like, well, that's too high. And they're like, well, okay, sure. Maybe we can. Let me look at Newton meters. Hold, give me a second. Where's my piece of paper?
Working on it right now.
Nope, that's not right.
That's 530 Newton meters. So no, that's not right either.
Yeah, that doesn't work right either. Maybe it's kilowatts.
That would be smaller. So 280 horsepower would be like 225.
Oh my God, you guys! I am totally just hearing the Charlie Brown voice in my head right now.
I'm sure that someone in Germany will tell me what it is. But I'm not in Germany right now. I'm at home. So, so yeah, Mercedes-Benz EQE. It's a nice, quiet, comfortable. Not wagon. Did I say wagon?
No, you were. No. You sounded like you were about to, but you stopped yourself.
2023 Mercedes-Benz. Let's just start over. Here we go. Everyone ignore everything I just said.
Everything you said. 2023 from your mind.
2023. Mercedes-Benz EQE sedan with a proper trunk, comfortable, quiet. I have no idea how much it costs.
Presumably somewhat less than the $102,000 starting price of an EQS.
Yeah. It would be less than that. But it's a weird because the EQS is less expensive than the S-Class, but I don't think the EQE is going to be less expensive than the E-Class because the E-Class starts at like 60-ish. So maybe it'll be a parity. Maybe it'll be a little bit more. I can't see this thing starting at 55, 50. Maybe it will. I don't know. When they shared the EQE pricing, I was like, well, okay then. Fine. Okay. I thought it'd be more.
When does it go on sale here in North America?
It'll be on sale sometime this year.
Okay.
Sorry,
sometime between now and December 31st?
Yeah.
It'll be on sale someday at a price of some amount.
Yes. The 350 will be out before the 500, and the 500 is also due this year. So one will be on the 27th of December, one will be the 29th.
And since it is 2022... you will have to pay an exorbitant dealer markup on whatever the sticker price ultimately is anyway.
Oh yeah, they're gonna rip you off. They're gonna take all your monies and they're gonna cry.
All right. Nicole, are you ready?
I am ready. So right. I too had a Mercedes, but I know the price and I know when it's out. So
look at you with your knowledge.
Smarty pants.
My knowledge. I'm all fancy pants here. Okay, so I had the 2022 Mercedes-Benz GLS 450, which is a 7-passenger SUV. It is, I'll just get right to the price because I normally forget about it. Base price on this puppy is $77,200 with the wide assortment of package stuff, options, special paint, heated rear seats, driver assistance.
Oh boy.
Acoustic comfort, AMG line. It is $97,155.
Oh, is that all? I was thinking closer to like 130 or 140.
I know, the fact that it came in under 100, I was kind of impressed. When I went down, I'm like, this has got to be, oh, didn't even hit the $100,000 car. So by a skosh, just dun, dun. Just by a smidge. So it is
a bargain at half the price.
A bargain, right? So it is powered by a 3-liter six-cylinder turbocharged engine, 362 horsepower, 369 pound-feet of torque, and a 9-speed automatic transmission. It's a big vehicle. It's definitely not tiny, but it moves. I mean, you push the gas and it moves. And like Robbie was saying, it's got that Mercedes thing where it's aggressive, but it's like, I am mild-mannered aggression. I'm not like in your face angry. It's like, you can take me, you know, aggressively through the twisting turns or just kind of, you know, enjoy yourself.
It's like a thoroughbred. It's not, yeah. it's not a crazed squirrel.
No. what car, wait. Pause. What car would qualify as accelerating like a crazed squirrel, Robbie?
Oh, what would? Oh, Kona N.
Okay, yeah. Fair. Kona N.
I think the Kona N, which is that the way that car drives is like a crazed squirrel, and I absolutely love it. But it is not a Mercedes. I love the Kona N. It's just like front wheel torque spin everywhere. You're like, crazed squirrel.
That's fair. So this is just a beautiful, powerful, responsive luxury car. It's very roomy. I found two things that totally drove me nuts. One, it has a heated steering wheel. I will be damned if I could figure out how to turn the darn thing on. I looked at every menu. I looked at every button. I was getting so aggravated. I'm like, I cannot figure. By the way, I'm telling my husband, this is actually how this story works. I'm telling him how cool the thing is where you can say, hey, Mercedes, and it'll do whatever it is that you want it to do. And use your neck.
Except turn on the heated steering wheel.
Literally. He's like, wait. Hey, Mercedes, turn on the heated steering wheel. Turning on the heated steering wheel. That was the only way I could do it. I couldn't find any other way.
That was the only thing it couldn't do.
I asked it to do it. I'm like, thank you. That's okay. The first time that the voice control in a car has ever been the solution to a problem rather than causing additional problems for me. So, but I still.
You finally made a friend.
I know. I still don't know if there is a button or a knob. I mean, we're sitting in there in the car, me, my husband and my daughter. I'm like, okay, none of the buttons that I can visibly see do this. None of the menus that I can see do this. I don't know where it was. I don't know where it was, people. I couldn't find it. We spent a good time trying to. No, couldn't find it. Nothing that looked like it would work. We pushed buttons that adjusted other things. No heated steering wheel. So, but no, couldn't find it. So Mercedes, like, where the heck is the button? Anyway, someone's going to be like, Nicole's right in front of you in the middle of the steering wheel. Still couldn't find it. The other thing, this is a really weird thing. So it has, what do they officially call them? Illuminated running boards. They are, if I got this right, following across this chart, they're $650. And they're just what you think. They're running boards on the side of the car. They are the single most oddly placed running boards ever. And I thought it was just me until my teenage daughter complained about it. They're too high. So when you go to step out of the car, if you actually step on them, you're like standing over, like you're looking across the top of the car. But if you don't step on them when you get out, they stick out just far enough that they're jabbing you in the back of your calf and possibly making a really dirty mark along your pants because there's dirt on the bottom of the car. They're in this strangest spot. And I kept hitting it as I was stepping out. I thought, this is so weird. What is wrong with me? And my daughter's like, these things are really weird. They keep, I don't know, do you stand on them or not? Because they make you too high. And I'm like, so it wasn't just me. So they have oddly positioned illuminated running boards, which are an option. Don't get those. They don't belong in this car.
You don't need. Well, I don't. I mean, for me, most running boards don't belong on any car, but I'm very tall. And so I'm always having to step past every running board except for like one, except for like a giant like GMC 1500 or something ridiculous where it's like some, for some reason, raised for no whatever. But every other running board, I'm all, out the car.
Yeah. So normally I can use them and I either do or don't depending on the car, but if I choose to use them, I step up and I sit in the car the right way. Or if I choose to skip it, I just step over it. This one, it's just there messing with you every time you get it out of the car. Do you step on me and you have to like step up and crouch to get in because now you're too high? Or do you step over? And then it's like this weird It's weird. I just liked. Yeah. So those are my my two little complaints about this car are so finicky. It's ridiculous, but they drove me crazy the whole week I had the car.
Do you think maybe the heated steering wheel button was on the running boards?
Oh, God damn it. That's where I reached out. There was an illuminated steering wheel, like little button.
You gotta tap it with your foot.
You just tap. I just want to see that. You just open the door, tap the running board, close it again. Your heated steering wheel's on. That had to be it. That makes perfect sense.
Tap.
But I mean, other than my two ridiculous quibbles with this car, I really did enjoy it. It's a nice car. It's quiet. It's beautiful. It has that Mercedes luxury thing. Like if you truly just want this beautiful luxury car that coddles passengers, that has a smooth, almost floaty ride, but not so floaty that you feel like you're disconnected from the road as a driver, like you're still engaged with a car as you're behind the wheel, but it's not, you don't have to work for it. It's so relaxed and it's so easy to drive and unbelievably quiet. Like you can sit in the driver's seat and have someone all the way in the back and you can just carry on a conversation as though you're sitting right next to each other. It doesn't matter if it's windy and rainy and you're on the highway going 65 miles an hour. It's still this quiet, well-mannered car. And I happened to notice I was coming out. I drive back and forth to Boston all the time. And there's a section of road that is road in the loose sense of the word. It really should only be driven by like Wranglers and Broncos, but it is technically a road in downtown Boston and it's horrible. And driving it in the Mercedes, I thought, oh my gosh, you don't feel this. You don't feel it. And I can see that it's a wreck. You don't hear it. And I know how it's felt and how it sounds driving over that in numerous press cars. In this one, you'd actually think that Boston spent some money on their roads. All visual appearances to the contrary. So it does what a luxury car should do, which is give you this beautiful, elegant passenger experience with enough engagement that you enjoy driving the vehicle. But unless you're getting like a super high performance version of something, you don't want to feel like you have to work too hard to do it. And that's exactly what this one does. Nice, perfect, calm, luxury vehicle.
The nice non-AMG.
Yeah, nice non-AMG. Like if you want the like, little crazy, go AMG. This is not what this is. And that's the thing. Like I like the crazy, but if you don't want the crazy, maybe you don't want the crazy every day.
Sometimes you want something a little more mild.
You just want to be mild-mannered and enjoy the drive and kind of relax. And yeah, so this would be the car for that. So that was...
Sometimes you don't want the extra spicy.
You just want the mild, you know, or just regular even. You don't just... I'm not looking for that, like, I have to sign a waiver to eat those wings. I don't need that level of spicy tonight. Just medium level.
You don't want a crazed squirrel all the time.
You don't want a crazed squirrel all the time. Exactly.
Words to live by.
So that is the Mercedes-Benz GLS 450, which I really did enjoy, aside from the missing heater button and the running board.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Now, the other car that I drove two over the course of the last few weeks where I haven't had a chance to be on the show because life has been crazy. I also drove the Hyundai Santa Cruz, which is their little
trucklet.
Trucklet. I like that, trucklet. Sam. Trucklet. It's a trucklet.
A medallion of truck.
A medallion, just a medallion of a truck, not a full-size truck, not a bone-in truck, just a truck medallion. Yes. So I had the Hyundai Santa Cruz, which was new for 2022. And it's like a small truck. It has a neat little cargo cover that can support, like a person can stand on it. That's how support, like how strong this little cargo cover is. So it's sturdy. It's comfortable inside. So it reminds me in some ways of the Honda Ridgeline, where it's a truck, but it has a ride that's more like a car, which is not a bad thing. And if you want some truck capability, but you don't necessarily need to be like crazy about it. You're just like, I would really love to have a bed so I could put in my bikes, or I could put in things just a little bit too big, or like sporting equipment or yard stuff, project stuff. It's great for that. Like an active mulch. My husband got mulch this weekend. He sent me a picture and I totally thought he did. And it wasn't even a truck. He just stuck it in the back of his Wrangler, but I was like, mulch. So it is that kind of vehicle. I mean, it's designed to be that way. It's not like this insanely off-road capable car. It's not a truck. It's not this overpowered performance truck. It's just a decent, nice little truck, smaller size, that makes it great if you're someone who goes on more urban areas where trying to even drive just a straight up boring F-150 without any lifts or anything can be a challenge to park those things in a city. This is easy to live with every day while still giving you a little bit of truck capability. I really am a fan of the Santa Cruz. I like it. You guys have driven this, right? Both of you have driven the Santa Cruz?
I have not driven the Santa Cruz yet. I've driven the Maverick, which is the American Santa Cruz.
I've driven it briefly at the Mama Rally last fall
when I
drove it back to back with the Maverick. Have you driven the Maverick, Nicole?
I have. I've driven both.
Oh, so I like the both of you. How do you now? We got to make a we have to
now
have
we
a
have
fight.
A fight. Now we have a fight.
I like drama.
We don't have a fight. We could agree. Which one? What did you think of the Santa Cruz? And then what did you think of the Maverick?
I mean, the Santa Cruz is good. You know, it's basically the same as the Tucson. You know, the interior, the cabin is, you know, it's the front half of it is basically a Tucson. and then you've got a bed on the back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's decent. There's some stuff about the new Tucson that I'm not crazy about. Like some of the stuff that should be physical controls, like the climate controls, they've done it as touch controls, which I'm not a fan of in that respect. That, I mean, go with knobs. It's simpler and
agreed.
Functional. But you know, otherwise it's fine. The Maverick, you know, is you can get it for, well, at least theoretically get it for significantly less money than a Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. And it's with the hybrid, it is way more fuel efficient.
Yes.
Right now, and I'm sure it's only a matter of time before Hyundai drops their hybrid powertrain in the Santa Cruz because they already have it in the Tucson.
Right.
And they may even do the plug-in hybrid, which is also in the Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
That will kind of even out that part of it. Although I can't imagine that Hyundai will offer a $20,000 Santa Cruz hybrid to go up against the $20,000 Maverick.
I don't think it will. I think Ford has that nailed that, but I think the thing is, and correct me if I'm wrong, last time I looked, like the availability in the Maverick was just terrible. Like you couldn't get, it was a great idea, but good luck getting one. But if they were both on the lot today, I think the Maverick has a bit more to offer, and it still looks great inside, and it's just so dang cheap. I mean, mm-hmm. Does it start under 20? Am I remembering?
It's like 19,995
or something. So it's basically 20, and the Santa Cruz starts at just a smidge under 24. So you're talking, you know, like $4,000. That's not a small amount, you know, especially when you're at this lower price point and you're trying to get something, let's say you're a first time buyer or something, you're on a budget. That's a huge chunk of change. You know, that's going to make a big difference in how much you're going to pay. And the hybrid thing, the fuel economy, especially with where gas prices are right this minute, that again is a huge amount of money you're putting back in your pocket by having a hybrid instead of just having a straight up gas engine. So I don't dislike the two. I mean, but between the two, Sam, I agree with you that I would go with Maverick before I would go with Santa Cruz.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. But I do think the Santa Cruz has a little bit of a cushier. The one thing I will say, it has a more, It has a more comfortable interior. It's a little bit more nice.
Yeah, it does feel a little more premium.
Yeah, where you're what you sacrifice for that price difference.
You're still getting that Hyundai premium interior.
Right, you're getting that premium interior feel in the Santa Cruz. And the Maverick is really lovely inside. They do a great job, but it definitely feels more its price point. It feels like they've done things to be not, it doesn't look cheap, but just like economical because it's nice. It doesn't feel crappy or cheap, but the Santa Cruz actually feels kind of nice inside. So if you want that nicer vibe, go for the Santa Cruz.
Yep.
Nicer vibe.
Nicer vibes in the Santa Cruz.
Yeah. I haven't driven to Santa Cruz. I'm kind of sad because I see them around. I've seen a lot of Mavericks and Santa Cruz. People are buying them when they can get them here in the old Northern California. So people like them. So now you have a choice,
My next door neighbor loves his XL hybrid, Maverick XL hybrid. They got it in January. They ordered it in October and got it right at the beginning of January. So, it was about 2.5 months to get it. They ordered it right when it was launched.
Right when it came out. I had a neighbor who ordered an F-150 hybrid in October, and they just got it. Just got it.
Whew. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not surprised.
Yeah.
The only thing my neighbor was disappointed was when he realized that getting the XL, he didn't get cruise control. But there's a company that does an aftermarket cruise control system.
He's going
to
do that.
That's pretty easy to install in there. And so he's ordering that and getting that put in. It's like $250.
I'm the only person I think in the universe that is really not a fan of cruise control. I just never.
No, I had a whole thing about it. Were you here?
I don't know. Was I here?
I just complained about how much I don't care about cruise control.
Maybe I was. Yeah. Maybe I wasn't. But I feel like most people love it. Like it's deal breaker type material. And I'm like,
cruise control. Yeah. Cruise control is basic. I never use cruise control. I never use cruise control on any car.
My husband added it to his Acura Integra, the old original one.
Really?
And it was this little square box thing that was stuck to the dashboard.
I added it to my 84 GMC S15 when I was in college.
Oh, you were doing the crazy long drives, though.
That's right. I was driving back and forth between Hamilton and Flint.
I don't trust cruise control because you just ram into the back of another car. Adaptive cruise control, thumbs up. Regular cruise control, thumbs down. Just drive. It's fine.
Yeah, I agree. Good.
All right. So I also had an EV this week that I drove. It's the Mini Cooper SE, which is like the Mazda MX-30, a short-range EV. It's officially rated at, I think, 114 miles by EPA, 114 combined, which is not much, but if you need an urban runabout, it's enough. Let's see. Yeah, 114 miles. And, if you're just driving around town, and you're not driving, doing long road trips with it, it's adequate. But, man, this thing is so much fun to drive.
I was sad when they had to take mine away.
Yeah, 181 horsepower. Even got just a hint of torque steer sometimes. If you're accelerating hard out of a corner, you can feel it tug a little bit on the steering wheel. I love the size of the Mini, the Mini hardtop. It's that nice, small, compact, but it still feels roomy enough inside. You're taller than I am, Robbie. Even myself, 5'11", I have plenty of room inside that thing. Mine was in the chili red color, which just looks fantastic. When it was delivered to me, it was still on snow tires, which was fine because it was cold that week. The back seat in the Mini is, basically useless, unless you have very short people in the front seat.
Like back seat in air quotes, the back seat.
Yes, there is a back seat that's got a couple of seat belts there. And in theory, if there's people that are short enough in the front seats, you could possibly put somebody back there. Really consider this more of a two-seater with, a nice big cargo area.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I had, the base price on the Mini Cooper is $29,900. $4,000 signature plus trim package that gets you the power folding mirrors, the panoramic moonroof, The auto dimming mirror and a bunch of other stuff, the premium Harman Kardon sound system and nav. The minis still have the older version of iDrive in there, which means that it doesn't have support for Android Auto. It does support Apple CarPlay, but not Android Auto. So if you're an Android user, you can be aware of that. You know, you'll have to just use plain old Bluetooth streaming from your phone, in that case. They've figured out over the years how to integrate a touchscreen into the big center dial that used to be the speedometer, in the first couple of generations of modern minis, that was where the speedometer was, and that big center dial along with the radio. And there's a series of lights around the perimeter of the giant round circle in the middle that is also your state of charge indicator. You know, as your charge drops, you'll see the lights gradually deplete going around the circle counterclockwise. And then there's also a little digital, not touchscreen, just a little digital display in front of you that's the speedometer on this one, and also your other gauges for state of charge and range and stuff like that. Because it only has a 32 kilowatt hour battery pack, they only have support for 50 kilowatt AC, DC fast charging, which is fine, it'll still do a full charge in about half an hour on a fast charger because the battery is just not that big.
It's got a teeny tiny battery.
It's funny. I did take it after going for an extended drive on a Saturday morning. I did stop by my neighborhood Electrify America station, and it was the first time that I've been there when there was multiple other EVs all charging at the same time. There was somebody there with a Kia Niro EV.
Nice.
There was a Mach-E from Ford, which was part of the Ford Charge Angels team, which we talked about last week. It was the same one we talked about last week. And then there was also, while we were there, somebody pulled up in an ID4. So it was four vehicles using the six bays at this charging station. A couple of days later after I was there, I finally got my 240-volt outlet installed in my garage. So I managed to test charging here at home. And I have a 9.6 kilowatt charger, but the mini will only charge at 7.2 kilowatts, and I plugged it in and let it charge, and indeed it was charging, cranking right along at 7.2 kilowatts until it filled up the battery. Energy efficiency on this thing is actually quite good. It was getting about 3.7 miles per kilowatt hour, which is pretty decent.
That's good.
Yeah, better than most EVs. $34,750 all in for this particular one, including a delivery charge of only $850, which is surprisingly modest.
Oh, they're tiny little cars.
Yeah, that's true. You can throw three or four of these in the space of one Hummer EV.
Yeah, you could just throw it in a backpack
or shove it overhead.
At the delivery charge on the Mercedes, I had $1,050.
Well, that's not bad.
Still low.
Yeah. Although, it's only coming from Alabama. Yeah, right. This one's coming from England.
That's true. One
thing to be wary of, while I really enjoyed driving this, there's only one real complaint I had about the car, which was the seats. The bolsters on the seat back, were fine. It was really comfortable. It was just the right spacing. But the bolsters on the seat cushion felt really narrow and were pressing in on my thighs the whole time, much more so than almost any other car I've driven, even driving like the M4 competition a couple of months back, that had the carbon fiber seats, that was just a, totally unadjustable carbon fiber shell with a bit of padding on it. These were quite narrow. And I did find it rather annoying after about an hour or so of driving. But since you can't go very far in this thing anyway, probably
after an hour you're done. You got to pull over anyway.
But the other thing to be wary of, a friend of ours lives in California who happens to have a Mini Cooper SE. And she got hers in December of 2021. Has been having a very bad experience with her local mini dealer with her car. And excuse me, her mini has been she's had some serious issues with it. Back in February, it had to have its whole power electronics module replaced, and her local mini dealer where she bought the car could not figure out even how to diagnose it, to figure out what was wrong with it. Yeah. And they actually had to send it to a BMW dealer in San Francisco to get it diagnosed and repaired because the mini dealer did not know what to do. They got it back. It's been working for the last month or so. And now today she tweeted out that she got a notification that it won't charge. It won't charge anymore. And she's got to contact service, and she tried contacting the mini dealer again. And then, even though, you know, a BMW dealer, and BMW owns Mini, even though the BMW dealer did all this service on the car and had the car for 3 weeks,
they
can't find any record of it ever being serviced.
What?
So they, you know, it's like they don't talk to each other.
Oh, geez.
And so now she's so fed up that, you know, she's just about ready to do a lemon law claim on this thing and turn it in and get her money back on this thing. So, you know, Mini over the years has had some issues with dealers and customer service. So that is something to be wary of if you're thinking about buying one of these. But, oh, man, it is so much fun to drive. I mean, like every Mini ever, you know, this thing is like a little go-kart. And it's got so much torque from the electric motor that it's just, it's a blast. So, it, you know, it's a little bit of caveat emptor there. Buyer beware of what you might have to deal with.
Dun, dun, dun. It's always sad when you're like, it's the dealership network is just like, eh. And that's what, like, makes you not want to get the car.
I know.
That's why people hate dealers. Like, because they get one bad experience. Yeah. But there's like a big part of the car ownership experience. It doesn't take much to have that completely taint you for a whole brand. It's not just that you have a bad experience with the Mini. It's not just that you don't like that dealer. You're like, Mini, they're all awful. And somewhere there's a dealer who's not, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know,
there's a dealer who's
not. Didn't find that guy. You got the bad one. Sorry.
You got to find the bad one.
I've personally been fairly lucky with the dealers I've dealt with over the years that I haven't had any such experiences, or at least mostly not. The problem is, you know, people see the brand sign on the building when you pull in, and they don't. Most people don't realize that dealers are independent businesses,
right?
And you know, they see the brand on there and they assume that the manufacturer has more control over it. And dealers really need to, especially with EVs, dealers need to do a better job of taking care of their customers, of, you know, helping them when they want to buy an EV, and then helping them with after sale service, you know, doing it, you know, providing proper maintenance, you know, proper service and diagnosis, you know, when there's an issue and getting it fixed promptly.
Yeah.
And it's really a shame to see something like this happen, especially when it's such a fun car to drive.
That's a shame.
All right, let us move on. So we had the Mini Cooper SE, and the two of you got to drive another EV that is ever so slightly larger.
Just a little bit, not very much. I mean, just a skosh, just the tiniest little bit larger, maybe, Roberto?
Let's say you had a house.
Yeah.
And you wanted to, I don't know, live in that house.
Yes.
But the house is also a car. That's the GMC Hummer.
Oh, that's accurate. It's about that way.
Except your house is probably lighter.
You could put the house in the bed of your truck and take it with you. In case
you unless you want to carry a spare tire, though.
You can carry two spare tires.
Weight is the battery killer. It's too much weight. You can't just put like an extra tire in there. That's going to add a bunch of weight.
Heavy.
A 9,000-pound vehicle.
Heavy vehicle, the GMC Hummer. So, what did you think driving it? What was your overall?
So, I'm going to start with the Hummer brand as always being big and over the top and ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing small or subdued or logical really about the Hummer. Mm-hmm. It's always just been way too big, way too much, way too. It's America. And the
Hummer America
EV,
on wheels.
Yeah, it is America on wheels, and the Hummer EV delivers all of that. It's way too big. It's way too inefficient. It's way too heavy. And then you drive it, you're like,
it's so much fun.
it's fun and weird and goofy. And I mean, I wouldn't buy one, but I'm more than happy to drive one around.
Well, it's if you wanted to buy one, you either already bought it and you have the edition one, I believe it's called.
Edition one, yeah. Away,
or you're waiting because you can't get one. Right? The edition one is done. And now we're on to, I've just drawn a blank. It's like the EV2X and the EV2 and the EV3X. They're all coming out, but like later you can reserve those, but you will have no Hummer in your driveway today.
Yeah, no Hummer in your driveway. It's big and crazy, and we did most of our driving off-road, mm-hmm. where we were going pretty slow. When we were on road, it's funny because it has Watts to Freedom. You got to be in like off. Was it off-road?
But what do they call that? What's the abbreviation of that? Watts to Freedom, because they're all
WTF.
Mm-hmm. WTF.
WTF. But it's
probably had it on everything, like stickers and stuff. WTF. Yeah. It took me, I totally forgot what it meant. I'm like, why are they putting on all their stuff? Oh, wait, Watts to Freedom.
And again, this is one of those things where like, hey, look how cool we are. Like Ford Broncos GOAT. I'm like, all right, go over any terrain. We know what you're doing.
We get it.
But no, it's big and insane. And if you drive it on the road and you like stomp on the accelerator, like it dives back. You stomp on the brake, it dives. It drives like a big, gigantic, very heavy truck that has to deal with the pesky laws of physics. we went off road. We got to do
When you have a center of gravity that's about 4 feet in the air.
Yeah. We got to do Watts to Freedom. But of course, the car like lowers itself. Like a service elevator. And then you take off really quick and you're like, yay, but it has all the lights and everything and the rumbling chair and the sounds.
So one of the cool things was talking about the lights and everything they have. It's the Unreal Engine. Is that the right thing?
Yeah, they're the Unreal Engine
on the infotainment system. So it's like you get this beautiful little video every time you change from one mode to the next. It is real. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like watching. It is like watching a video game. It is some of the crispest, most striking graphics. You're like, ooh, it's going over the moon now. What's happening? Oh, wait, I should be driving.
Except
it's a video game touchscreen.
I watched your video, Robbie, on Gadget, and it did seem to take a while to go from like one screen to another. I mean, was that an accurate impression? I mean, did it seem to be kind of
like you turn it and then it would go, and then you turn it. It's not like immediate, so I'd turn it and then it would happen.
But the screen, but you also don't have to wait, because it does take that. There's that second where you're waiting for your fancy little cutscene to come through there, but you don't actually have to wait. Like it's kind of like done its thing before the cutscene has finished.
Yeah,
like
so you're in the mode.
Yeah,
you're just waiting for the cartoon.
You're just waiting.
The mode happens and then the cartoon happens. Mm-hmm. And it's very cool and impressive, and it's again, it's video game cutscenes essentially. But it's, it's, I mean, when you're towing like a Saturn rocket, when you're in like regular mode, you're just kind of driving on the moon. And then when you're in like terrain mode, I think you're driving over Mars. I can't remember which.
It looks like Mars. I don't know if it's supposed to be Mars.
Yeah, it's Mars. Like for some reason you're going off road on Mars.
They have this whole like moon theme thing to it all. In fact, if you look at the speaker grills on the side on the doors, they have a topographical map of the moon. And then on the one, there's even a little astronaut boot print. I think it's on the driver's side. If you look, there's a little boot print.
The dead pedal used to be a moon boot, and they removed that.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, so when they had the first pre-production model, they were sort of touring around. You'd go and see how large it was. It had the dead pedal was the boot, and so I'm like, oh, it's a dead pedal boot. And they're like, oh, we took that out. I'm like, oh,
that would have been cute. I never saw that. Well,
you know, it probably added too much weight.
At least they kept, because right, because this is all about
you just save a couple ounces,
lightweighting at every possible opportunity. But I liked it. I think it was fun off road. And that WTF mode really is absolutely ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. Bonkers. It is just bonkers. That I did find that if you are driving it on road, it does have some pretty hefty blind spots. It's a little hard to see. Like you feel like you're turning, you're kind of doing that. You aren't just looking to your right. You're like all the way look to the right because you're. Yeah. It's got blind spots galore. But it is unbelievably fun.
You have 18 cameras or something like that. So
9 cameras, 18 views.
Oh, okay.
Well, there. Look at you with the facts and figures.
I know. I was less. I had less jet lag when I was in Arizona because
you were more. You were like on it when it came to whatever. I thought it was really neat. It was interesting to hear the design and the effort that went into creating this and how they were just trying to kind of go all out and say like, okay, we have a brand that everybody knows, but it's coming back as something entirely different. Like the antithesis of the gas guzzling Hummer. It's now an EV.
It's an electron guzzling Hummer.
Yeah. Electron guzzling Hummer.
Well,
so I think that's kind of neat. I like it. I think, you know, you wonder how many people are going to spend. The current one is over, what is it, $110,000 for the sold out edition one. And I think eventually by 2024, when we get through the next 3 trims, we have one that's $80,000. But it's like the next, like it's, you know, as it goes through, they gradually get to the less expensive trim, but you're going to wait 2 years to get to the cheapest one. And the cheapest one is $80,000. It's like $79,900.
People are going
to
buy this thing like crazy. I mean, it's inefficient. It gets like 1-point-something miles per kilowatt. It's heavy. It weighs nearly as much as a lunar module. The lander. The car's like 9,042 pounds or whatever. That lunar module, the dry weight, was like 9,400 and something pounds. So just throwing like people in there, you weigh as much as the thing that landed on the moon.
And, you know,
they're trying to stick with their moon themed thing.
And for a giant truck like this, you know, it doesn't have much. It's only, 1,200-pound payload capacity, I think, and 7,500-pound towing. I mean, the towing you would expect because usually when you have a high-riding pickup like this, you know, the same thing is true for the Ram 1500 TRX, you know, or the Raptor. When you jack them up like that, you know, the towing becomes more challenging. So they reduce the towing capacity. But 1,200-pound payload, you know, for a truck this size is – pretty small.
Yeah.
You can't drag that lunar module around.
I feel like you are in no way buying this because of any practical anything.
It is not a utilitarian vehicle. It is a, hey, look at what I got.
You didn't buy the original Hummer for any practical anything. It was like great, big, giant vehicle. Buy. That's kind of what you're doing with this. You're just adding great, big, giant EV. Buy.
Well, the original, the H2 was horrible at going off-road. It was just a Suburban. It was just not a good off-roading vehicle. This thing, at least you can take it off-road. We went up some things.
Yeah, legitimately go off-road. We did some decent little off-roading in this, I thought.
And it like a little narrow.
Did you get
area.
To try crab walk?
Yes.
Yeah.
I used crab walk before, which is the weirdest. Oh, I watched it. Okay, so the thing with crab walk, which is really cool. I feel like crab walk's going to get you out of that thing that you shouldn't have been stupid enough to try to get into in the first place. It's like, oh, you should not have done this. Now you
it's need like to a reverse button walk. For stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Right. It's like the reverse stupid button. It's like the oops, I shouldn't have done this. And it doesn't, it's not perfectly to the like perpendicular to the side. It's sort of like slightly at an angle. Like it's not perfectly sideways. So you're kind of slideways and forward a little bit. But I saw some people trying to try it. It takes a little getting used to. It's really funky and it feels like it's broken. You're like, I broke the car because it just doesn't, nothing is moving the way you expect it to move. But I watched someone do it and they crab walked right into like this giant shrubbery and we're behind him looking, going, no, 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 stop crab walking. Just go straight, go straight, go straight.
Oh.
Yeah. So I think it was because he didn't get quite the angle. Because you have to relearn the angle that you're going at. You think you turn and you know where you're going to turn. You go straight and you know where you're going to go. Suddenly you're going at this weird angle and your mind's like, it's like you're like, you've just got your driver's license. I don't know where this thing's going. So it's a little weird. That was my thought on crab walk.
This thing strikes me as the 2022 alternative to the International CXT. Did you guys ever see one of those? Navistar built these. They launched it, I think, around 2007 or something. Dropping a link to it in the Slack. Basically, they took an international harvester medium duty truck and put a Ford Super Duty pickup bed on the back.
That's
sold crazy. These things. The only time I ever saw one of these out in the wild was actually when I was in Silicon Valley. In some business park, there was a bright yellow one that somebody was driving. Yeah, I mean, this thing's just absurd. You know, it's not really useful for anything, but, you know, it shows that you've got maybe more money than sense.
It's big for the sake of big.
Yeah.
The Hummer, big for the sake of big. It's I think a lot of people are going to buy it who probably wouldn't have bought an EV in the first place. And, you know, it's still better than, you know, running a car on dead dinosaurs. So at least you got that, but it's going to take days. If you just plug it into your wall at home, it'll take over a week in order to
probably
charge it.
Yeah,
because it says okay, so the whole like GM's okay, well, what's the usable capacity? Well, it's 205. I'm like, okay, but there's an EPA piece of paper that says 212. They're like, well, there's that. And they just kept like going around in circles, and I'm like, "Oh my God, you're hurting my head." They couldn't, they would like one of neither of them is the official number, but they're both the official number.
Because this isn't a light duty truck because it weighs over 8,500 pounds. Mm-hmm. It doesn't technically have to be certified. It doesn't have to have a range or battery capacity on the label or anything like that.
But they still should just be able to give me a straight answer about like the usable capacity, and they won't. They're not sharing the gross capacity, so it's actually it's at least larger
from the
than
EPA numbers. You can back calculate it. It comes out to 247 kilowatt hours.
247, which is 24 modules, which is it's huge.
I mean, this is basically two batteries stacked on top of each other. And it's each one of these layers has almost the capacity of the extended range battery in the F-150 Lightning, which is 131 kilowatt hours. So you've got
like
150
Lightnings. You slam them on top of each other.
Yeah, you've got 124 kilowatt hour batteries stacked on top of each other. Yeah, and the Lightning's going to have 131.
Yeah. It's insane. But like you're all that money you're spending, there's like a billion little features that you get. It's not like you're just spending a lot of money on a big battery or just spending money on it's just a ton of stuff. And the Unreal Engine stuff is pretty impressive, even if it does take a beat or so for it to launch. So the GMC Hummer, America. That's what it is. It's big, it's too much, it's expensive. And at the end of the day, you're like, you know, this place is pretty cool.
Really
but then you're like, I don't know if I...
But also really, really freaking cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in the last couple of weeks, we also, Nicole and I had the chance to drive another EV for the first time. And actually, you drove a different version of this. You know, Nicole and I drove the Toyota BZ4X. And Nicole, I don't know if you drove the Subaru Solterra, but you did, Robbie.
I didn't get to drive anything.
You didn't? I thought you drove the Sultan.
No, I had other things I had to do. There's too many things going on.
Okay. So we drove the BZ4X in Encinitas. What did you think of it? This is Toyota's first purpose-built EV.
Okay, so it's It's fine. It's fine. Didn't you say that about something a while ago? It's fine. It's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine. It does what it's supposed to do. It's a decent little EV. I feel like the competition in that little segment, that kind of that style, that size, is really, really tough. And I think there are better options out there. I think it's a nice first try, but I wish, especially on the interior, Toyota had done a little bit more with it than what they did with it.
Like what?
Made it look a little less plastic fantastic. I don't like interiors that feel like that. I want it. It doesn't need to be leather and, you know, wood grain ash, you know, trim or whatever the heck they put in cars. But I feel like there's some really good options out there that are just, they create a warm and welcoming passenger experience. And I feel like the BZ4X didn't necessarily, it feels a little down market. And
considering it starts at $43,000.
Exactly. And for the price, it's not price down market, but the interior, and I don't mean it. What was I was just describing something and I said it didn't feel cheap. It just wasn't as for the Maverick. It doesn't feel cheap. It just felt like a more affordable car. But nothing about the Maverick I looked and went, oh, that feels cheap.
Yeah.
The BZ4X had a little bit of a cheap feel inside, and it's not a cheap vehicle. It's expensive. So I feel like they kind of missed the mark on that. I feel like when you look at things like the EV6 and the I just forgot what the Hyundai is called,
Ioniq
the
Ioniq 5,
that those are in the same vein, and they look miles ahead of what Toyota offered in this. Sam?
One thing I did like was the fabric, whatever the hell it was, on the dashboard.
Oh, that fabric-y. Yes, it did.
Yeah, I liked that because, you know, it didn't, you know, it wasn't leather. It wasn't hard plastic. You know, it was something different, you know, and it wasn't just a grained plastic. I mean, obviously it was something synthetic that was, you know, is technically plastic.
Right.
You know, some sort of polyester, but
I thought it looked cool, but I also had the thought of, you know how if you don't clean your car all the time, your dashboard gets dusty. And all I could think was, honestly, because it's
that's a good point.
Because it's not it has a cool texture to it, but it's almost like it's sort of
curvy. It's going to trap stuff.
It is going to trap every last piece of dust and dirt that comes into your car. And the only way you're going to get it off is by putting the fancy little brush attachment on the hose on your vacuum cleaner. Excuse me. And it's not like you even have to be a neat nick. That is going to suck up a lot of dust. It looks really cute, but I just see it as being something that is going to show the dirt and the dust, whether it's actually, you know, whether you haven't cleaned it or you just happen to get a lot of dust in your car because you went someplace where there's a lot of dust in the air, it's going to show. It's really going to show. It's going to be a little bit pain in the butt to clean.
Yeah. And the, I thought there was a little too much piano black. This is often the case on the center console.
Yeah.
The shifter was kind of interesting. So it looks like a rotary shifter, but there's a ring, like a chromed ring around the perimeter that you push down and twist right to go to drive or left to go to reverse. And then you push the button in the middle to get neutral. And then the park button is in front of that. I thought that was a kind of a somewhat clever implementation that wasn't too annoying to use.
I would give you that. It was a different way because, you know, they all keep trying to come up. They sort of reinvent the wheel with how they're going to do those shifters, you know, because you don't need to have a physical thing that shifts on the steering column of old, and trying to come up with some different way. And some of them are confusing and some of them are good. This was pretty good. Although I did hear a couple of people who had a moment of like, how do I get into reverse again?
Yeah. It took me a minute to figure it out the first time.
Right.
But that's
one time. So the first time you get in your new BZ4X, you're going to look and think, wait a minute.
How do I turn on the heated steering wheel?
Right. Yeah, exactly. How do I turn? I didn't have that problem. How do I turn on the heated steering? But then you're going to be like, I know how this is. So yeah, that's a momentary throws you, but then it makes sense in the end. Yeah. I didn't mind that. I thought that was kind of a neat way to do that.
Yeah. I mean, overall driving, it was fine. You know, it was not exciting, but you know, it was uneventful.
What's the range on it?
It goes from, let's see, the low end at the upper end, the front wheel drive XLE with the 18-inch wheels gets 252 miles. And then the all-wheel drive limited with the 20-inch wheels is 222 miles. So, you know, it's not particularly impressive. You know, it's certainly, you know, it's kind of in the same ballpark as, you know, the, where the base is, you know, the standard range batteries for the Hyundai and the Kia. You know, it's less than the VW ID4, you know, but, you know, a max of 252 miles, not that great. You know, certainly not going to get that 300 miles. You also don't get the really fast charging. It's only, I think, 150 kilowatt charging. Mm-hmm. You know, which is okay, but, you know, again, compared to the Hyundai and the Kia with their 230 kilowatts, you know, it's not going to keep up with those. The instrument cluster is kind of interesting in this thing because, you know, in most vehicles where there is an instrument cluster, it's usually down lower. So you're looking at it through the top half of the steering wheel. And this one is up on top, and there's like a channel that goes across the top of the dash, and the cluster is out kind of near the base of the windshield. So it's up above the steering wheel, and it's almost like, you know, like the those cheaper heads-up displays that have the glass that flips up on the top like of the dash. It's in that same kind of position, but it's easier to read than those are.
Yes.
So it's... Yeah, you know, it's. I thought that was, again, kind of a somewhat clever solution, if not necessarily the most attractive.
I felt like it was cool, but I had a weird. I had a hard time, finding the right seating position for me that I could see the road and still see everything on the instrument cluster. I somehow kept getting it so I had to look like between the gap in the steering wheel, and I couldn't. So like a few things would be hidden, like I couldn't see the. When we were filing, you know, you're following how many miles you have before each turn when you're on these drive routes. And I couldn't quite see the miles that I had driven so far. So it was like I kind of had to duck down a little bit or look up a little bit. And if I tried to lower the steering wheel to see over it, then the steering wheel was just too low. Like it was almost like my hands would hit the tops of my legs. Like when I had them on, if I put them at the bottom of the wheel, if I lifted it up too high, well, now I'm looking at my hands and I'm driving. What are the motorcycles? The eight.
The like, choppers.
Yeah, like whatever. With your hands or way up in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, well, that's not how you drive this. I got to lower this down. So it was just, I had a little trouble. Like it was a neat design, but I felt like, and the person I was driving with, I'd say she's about the same height as me, but she experienced the same thing when she started messing with the seats and trying. She's like, I can't seem to see all of the instrument cluster at the same time. I have to choose which pieces I want to see or which pieces I don't, because she couldn't quite get it to show what she wanted without having to look through the middle of the steering wheel.
So it sounds like that's definitely something that if you're considering this thing, you definitely want to actually take it for a test drive and
drive make sure it you see. Can, yeah.
That it works for you. One thing, even for me, you know, I was able to see the steering, the cluster clearly all the time. You know, my seating position and steering wheel position was fine for that. Mm-hmm. But you know, you definitely want to drive with your hands at 9 and 3 or 10 and 2 with this thing. You don't want to be driving along with your hand on the top of the steering wheel rim because it will block, your hand will block half of the cluster if you're doing that.
Yeah.
So you won't see the cluster if you're driving that way. A couple of other complaints I had about this thing. On the first time out, when we were starting, when the batteries were full on these things, if you try to engage the regen boost, which gives you the higher regen, it's not as strong a regen as what you get on a lot of other EVs, but it's stronger regen. When the battery is full, when you lift off the accelerator, when you try to engage the regen boost, it will give you a message on the cluster that says that regen is not available right now. And the way the text reads, it comes across as though it's an error message, like there's actually something wrong. And what it is just that, you know, the battery's full and it can't absorb any more energy from regen.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
And in most other EVs, in fact, in all other EVs, you know, they don't bother to tell you that part. It just adjusts the blending of friction brakes and regen And, you know, when you lift off the accelerator, it'll give you friction brakes instead of regen in that case, if it can't, if the battery is too full to absorb any energy. And, you know, that I talked to the several of us actually spoke with the Toyota folks and told them that, hey, you know, this is probably a bad way to do this because it implies that there's something wrong when, you know, it's behaving perfectly normally, you know, and you should, you know, just don't even bother with that message. You know, drivers don't need to know that.
Don't put that in there because it makes it feel broken in a weird way.
Yeah. And then one other complaint I had was about the new infotainment system, which, you know, in most respects, it works really well, and it certainly works better than any previous Entune system. The voice control is actually works really well. You can control climate control and other stuff with voice commands. You can tell it to turn up the temperature or turn down the temperature and do a whole bunch of other things with it. So that part of it worked fine. My complaint with it was that it will only show... You know, it's a 12.3-inch display. It's a widescreen display. It's fairly large, but you can only display one thing on there at a time. So usually, when you have such a large display, they will split it up, you know, and give you like two panes, and you'll have a smaller pane on the left hand side, and then a larger window smaller pane on the right, and a larger pane on the left hand side. So you can have like your navigation map and the big window, and then in the small window you can have your media player controls, so you can if you want to pause or fast forward or something, you could just tap over there on that side of the screen to control whatever you're listening to, and then you have the map. And the way that Toyota has done this, they have decided that because they've got more robust voice control, they're only going to allow you to see one thing on the screen at a time. There's no windowing allowed. So if you're looking at the nav screen, you can't see any of your media controls. And their explanation was that, well, we think, you just use the voice recognition if you want to pause it or fast forward or do anything.
Wait, so there's no controls at all if you have the map on? Like nowhere else in the car? There's no like hard controls?
There's a volume button on the steering wheel.
Yeah, there's no...
But there's no forward and back for music on the steering wheel?
You can go forward and back, but there's no pause or if you want to change the mode or anything like that. Okay. Then you have to tap on the screen to go from the nav screen to the media screen or to the phone screen. So you can't have two things on the screen at one time. So there's none of the zero layer type of interface that you have in the Mercedes. Which, you know.
They should drive a Mercedes and check that out.
Yeah. Let's see. What else was there? That was the main things. Oh, I guess the one other thing related to the regen was when you have the regen boost on and the battery is somewhat depleted, so you can get regen. It won't bring the vehicle to a full stop with strong regen. And yeah, I asked them about that, and their rationale, which I disagree with, is that, you know, they want the driver to stay engaged, and they want the driver to actively move their foot from the accelerator pedal to the brake pedal. They think that that keeps the driver more engaged. And I don't buy that argument.
No, because when you're one pedal driving, you have to figure out like, okay, where can I lift in order to stop right at that line?
Yeah, because you have to really carefully modulate how much pressure you put depending on how close you are. Yeah, you are almost more engaged when you're
I think so too.
Because it's like a video game almost. Like, I'm going to do it. That's why I think Volvo's and Polestar's system is the best. It's the most intuitive. Because that's the one, like after two or three uses, I'm like, oh my God, I'm hitting the stop sign right at the line.
I found the same thing. Like right away, you're like, I got it. It's like, you're really excited. Like, yes, I killed the boss. Right away.
So that's pretty engaged now that we're...
as Robbie and I are cheering, I think, yeah.
We're like, yeah, you're just sitting at the stop line. Yeah.
I get it.
Everyone, people in cars next year are like,
is Robbie that guy?
So, you know... In using a baseball metaphor, which, you know, since I don't care about sports, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but, you know, I think it's a decent base hit. you know, for a first effort at a dedicated EV.
I don't even know what a base hit is. So, yeah, sure, it's a decent base hit.
Yeah, but it's not a home run by any stretch.
Oh, I know what that is. No, it is definitely not a home run. Yeah. That I can understand.
But they're only planning to bring 7,000 BZ4Xs to the U.S. this year due to their supply constraints, presumably with batteries or something, and then ramp them up sometime next year.
Batteries or something. I don't know. Batteries. Yeah, well,
they didn't
LEDs.
Say. They just said, you know, supply constraints.
Supply constraints, yeah.
And so they're only going to get 7,000 here this year, which presumably equates to the number of EVs that they need to sell to satisfy the California ZEV mandate.
Coincidentally.
Yep.
Coinkydink. Yeah. It's a coinkydink.
And they're going to start, like Hyundai and Kia, they're going to start off selling them in ZEV states like California and the other states that follow the California rules. And by the end of the year, they want to gradually ramp it up to being available in all 50 states. But since there won't be that many of them anyway, most other states probably won't get very many, if any at all.
That's a tough sell.
Yeah.
Here are all the things that are wrong. By the way, the Hyundai, the IONIQ 5 and the EV6 both exist.
Yeah.
Also, my Kona EV has better range. And it's just sitting there in the front yard.
Yeah.
My old Kona. Well, it's not old, but, you know, the car has been out for a few years.
Yeah. All right. So that's the Toyota BZ4X. It's okay.
It's fine.
Yeah. Not great.
Okay.
It's okay.
It's fine.
Any review, the Toyota BZ4X. It's okay.
It's fine. Those are the worst things to write, though. The thing where it's not like great, it's not horrible. It's just like, well, all right.
Okay. Yeah. It drives fine. You know, for the average person that drives a Corolla or a RAV4 or a Camry, you'll probably be completely satisfied with it.
You'll be fine.
Or mostly satisfied.
Fine enough.
All right. Jeep, we talked a few weeks ago about the new Stellantis Hurricane six-cylinder engine, turbocharged inline six-cylinder. It's finally got a home. It's going to launch in the new Jeep Wagoneer L that debuts this week at the New York Auto Show. As if the Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer weren't quite large enough, they made it a foot longer.
Yeah.
A foot long. It's like this. It's like you took a Subway sandwich, put it at the end of your Jeep, and said, you know what? Let's put this on the car. Eat fresh.
Other than the fact that it's longer, you've got 7 inches more wheelbase, so you've got more leg room, more room in the third row, and 50% more cargo space. I think it has like 44 cubic feet of cargo space behind the third row seats now. So, you know, you can store all kinds of stuff back there.
Everything you own, you can put in the back of the Jeep Wagoneer L. Yeah. What you own, just throw it in there. You'll have room.
And both the Wagoneer and the Grand Wagoneer L both come standard with the new Hurricane six-cylinder engines. The base Wagoneer gets a 420-horsepower version of it, and the Grand Wagoneer gets the 510-horsepower Hurricane 510 is what they're calling it. For obvious reasons, it's more power, more torque than the V8s in the standard length Wagoneers, which will probably also get this engine for later in 2022, and about 1 to 2 miles per gallon better fuel economy.
Woo! To two.
Well, I mean, when you're starting, you know, like 15 for the. for the Grand Wagoneer.
I don't even think you can look at fuel economy. If you're buying this car. And it is cool. I love this thing. But if you're buying this, fuel economy is not even on
your list.
It's not there. It's not even on the list of things that you were thinking about when you bought a car.
You're more concerned of like where are you going to park your private jet, or who's going to house sit in your house in the Hamptons, or
exactly. There is like fuel economy. What they don't even know what that is. Like what does that mean? What does that mean? I've never heard of that before.
Which private school will your child go to? Stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah.
Those are concerns.
No pricing yet on the L's. You know, presumably there'll be a few thousand dollars more than the standard length versions, and they will be available later this spring. I think they're starting production any day now if they haven't already.
Cool.
It looks pretty much the same as the standard version, except, you know, when you look at it in profile, you see it looks a skosh longer.
Yeah.
It's a foot longer. It's $5 foot long longer.
Oh,
it's $5,000. I hope it's $5,000 foot long. That way you can see the fire. You can sing the $5 foot long song.
There you go.
5,000 foot long.
Last item is Lincoln next week in Los Angeles will be unveiling a concept version of their upcoming EV crossover. That's coming presumably, I think the last we heard was in 2024, but they may try to accelerate that if they can. And they released a little teaser video that doesn't really show us much, except that it will have a light-up Lincoln star in the front. Mm. And that'll be in the show notes if you want to look at it.
Mm.
All right, let's answer a few listener questions. First up, from Andrew Pappas. How much will the GR Corolla cost? Isn't that the only question right now?
Did we talk about this last week, or did I just talk about this randomly with a random person?
I think we might have speculated about it.
Oh, okay.
We talked about the Corolla, but I don't know if we... I mean, I don't know. Nicole, you were at the reveal, weren't you?
I was.
Give you any kind of hints?
I'm drawing a complete and total blank. I am going to be totally honest. I don't remember discussing pricing at all.
Did they say when it's even going to be on sale?
I don't even know. I you know what? I'm going to be honest. I was caught off guard by this question. I was so focused on the rest of the show. I didn't prep this part.
Okay.
I don't know, Sam.
All right.
Someone's drinking at the Toyota event again.
I was actually mostly just jet lagged. So
there we go. That's our experience.
We can certainly speculate. You know,
but it's not coming out until the fall. So we do we've got some time. So I think, what is it saying? Fall of this year. So I feel like we've got a ways to go before we have any hint of what it's going to cost.
Well, since it's a 300 horsepower hot hatch, we can presume it's going to be similarly priced to other 300 horsepower hot hatches, you know, like the Focus RS and the Civic Type R. So probably somewhere between $38,000 to $40,000.
I'm going to say it's going to start just over 40. Like,
okay,
I'm going to say $37,000. No, $1. I'm going to say $1. That's how it works.
Right? So you're assuming we've both gone over.
You've gone over.
Price is right.
I don't know, because the Focus RS was like 42 or something?
No, they started at 35, and I think by the time they went out of production, they were about 37 or 38.
Okay, I'm still going to go with, 40,000.
What's the Supra start at?
That's a good question.
48?
Let's see. 43,290, according to the Google I just did.
43, okay. So
for the 2 liter?
So it has to be between the GR83 and it has to be between that and the Supra, I'm guessing.
Yeah, if this is 43,290 is the base on the.
So 37. GR-Supra. I'm going to say 37.
37?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess. It's not a lot of car. I mean, it's a lot of power, but it's like it's got a tiny engine. It's fewer.
A standard
things.
Corolla hatchback starts at 21.
Donuts.
Three-cylinder. It's only got three cylinders, so you're already...
It's 100 horsepower per cylinder.
100 horsepower per cylinder. It's not that big, so you don't need all those materials that you have on the larger cars. So I'm going to say 37.
It is a tiny little thing. I'm still sticking with 40,000.
The WRX is, what, 30? The GR86.
GR86 starts at 27.7.
Yeah, so that's...
And the Supra is 43.
Supra's 43. Yeah, I'm going to say 40, 37. Maybe even 35. I feel like it has to come in between. They have to, but the markup's going to be $20,000 on it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what we say.
So in reality, it's going to cost you $60,000.
$60,000, guys. That's what we're going with, Andrew. $60,000 is what you better save up if you want this come fall.
Yeah, okay. Andrew. It's going to be like the Type R, except
for $60,000.
and your left arm.
And your left arm.
One left arm.
You're
going to
need your right arm for shifting.
For shifting, right. They'll let you keep your right arm, but the left arm, forget it.
Yeah.
All right. David Lama asks, is it still the standard for cars to come with a spare tire and a jack kit? I heard from someone that this isn't the case anymore.
Depends on the car.
Yeah, it does. It varies widely. a lot of vehicles still come with a spare tire and a jack. My wife's Honda Civic has a spare tire and jack.
I can vouch that the all new Mazda CX-50 does in fact come with a not full size spare but a donut and a really impossible to use jack and little wrench to get the lug nuts off there.
This sounds like the voice of experience.
It might perchance be the voice of experience.
Did you actually have to put on the donut by yourself out on the off-road trail?
Not entirely by myself. I did. We changed a tire. Me and journalist Nick Miles. We were driving and it was all happy and good. And then we stopped and grabbed a coffee and came back out. And he's like, "Well, what? Oh my goodness!" With his little English accent. Oh, and you can see that it's like, you know, tipping down. It's like 28. It's like, oh, 27, oh, 26. We're like, oh, and I get out of the car and I'm looking at the tire and I'm like, wait, turn off the engine. And he turns off the engine. It's just. So we went. I think when we stopped, whatever it was, we must have put the pressure just the right way and it just let all the air out. So we got out of the parking lot and just kind of like drove out of the Starbucks crazy. And it was going to take Mazda about an hour for their chase car to get to us. So we said, wait a minute. Is there a spare inside here? Sure enough, there was. So we broke the spare out of the back and changed the tire to parking lot. And,
excellent.
We're on our way. So, yeah, that one does.
Okay. Yeah, lots of cars, especially, you know, larger SUVs, trucks, but even you know, some of the smaller ones still come with a spare tire. In a lot of hybrids and battery electrics don't, because they've stuffed that space with battery.
Right.
That's why, you know, oftentimes they just have an inflator kit. And in some cases, they also bypass the spare for an inflator kit to save weight. It's not necessarily to save so much money, because, you know, the donuts, you know, aren't that expensive, but it's actually more often to save weight because of the way they do the fuel economy testing. I remember back in 2011 when Chevy launched they had a version of the Cruise that was rated at 42 miles per gallon highway. And among the things that they did to get that 42 miles per gallon was they took out some stuff and reduced some weight to get it down to a lower test weight class. Because when they do the fuel economy testing on the dynamometer, they set up the load on the dyno based on the weight of the vehicle. And, you know, they have kind of, you know, 100 pound or 150 pound windows, you know, that you have to get into. And so they found that they could save about 20 pounds by replacing the spare tire with an inflator kit. And then that, along with a couple of other things, allowed them to get down into a lower test weight class, which made it easier for them to hit that 42 mile per gallon threshold. So sometimes they do little tricks like that, which can be annoying to customers, but, you know, they can advertise those big numbers.
Dun, dun, dun. Secrets of miles per gallon efficiency. Sam.
David also had another question. I was just looking at some older electric vehicles like the Volt, Leaf, iMEV online, and I'm interested in taking a look at these in person. What are some things to be aware of when looking at electric vehicles? Is there any way to test the battery health? Oh.
I honestly don't know that. Is there a way to test the health of the battery?
Those cars don't have a lot of range, so you just put it in EV range if it's the Volt and just drive it. That's kind of what it could.
How far you've actually?
Yeah, it depends. Depending where you're buying it from. I was interviewed a couple weeks ago by somebody from Ward's Auto about a story they were doing about Mannheim. Mannheim is the biggest auto auction company in the country. You know, they process a lot of the cars that are trade-ins or get returned from lease, you know, and they auction them off and sell them to dealers who then, you know, put them on their used car lots. And last fall, Mannheim actually started doing battery testing on the vehicles that come into their auction system, on the EVs and hybrids that come into their auction system. So they actually have developed some test procedures, and they, you know, they run through a bunch of tests, and they come up with a score out of 5 points for the battery health. And so they look at, you know, what is the capacity in the left in the battery and various other factors. I'll put links to this in the show notes. But if you're, you know, if you're buying a used vehicle from a dealer, at least, there's a pretty good chance that it went through Mannheim. And you can ask the dealer, you know, if they have, you know, any of the battery health results from the auction company, from Mannheim. And if they do, you know, chances are they'll, you know, if it's good, they'll probably put that on the window sticker anyway, and they'll be happy to share that with you. And if they decline to tell you, give you any information, well, you know, you may want to look somewhere else.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. At the very least, you know, see if you can, you know, take it for a test drive, you know, drive it around, you know, start it up, see what it reports as the range. That's left, you know, because if the battery has lost capacity, you know, if it's fully charged, you know, you'll be able to tell. You can find out what it was originally and see what it's reporting as the available range at, you know, at that point when you're driving it.
Then you have to do maths.
Well, you just see, you know, if it's less, you know, if it was originally 100 miles and it's only giving you 80 miles with a full charge, then you know you've lost, you know, you've lost a bunch of range, and you might not want that one. I know I was actually just talking with somebody last week. He used to work at GM, and he's still got a first generation Chevy Volt, you know, first model year 2011 Chevy Volt, and it's down. When it was new, it had 36 miles of electric range, and it's down to only 25 now.
Wow.
And it's, well, it's got over 100,000 miles on it too. So, last question from Josh Feltz: When do we expect to see the North American version of the ID Buzz? Really curious how the longer wheelbase will affect the proportions. Coming in 2024, they said.
April. But he wants the. But I think he wants to see it, like the actual, like, because we haven't seen what it looks like. We've only seen the short wheelbase.
Yeah.
So what's an auto show? Maybe Pebble Beach. So August?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they show it in Pebble.
Yeah, because they showed it off at Pebble before. They had a bunch of people drive the concept. So maybe Pebble Beach, maybe August.
Yeah.
What else is between now?
Or
and then?
Or maybe in the fall at the LA show.
I was going to say.
Oh yeah, LA show.
Maybe this fall, because LA will be coming back a little bit. Like, it was sort of low key this year, maybe by next or this past year, but maybe this year it'll be a little bit more robust, and that would be a good place for Volkswagen to show
something.
Oh yeah,
that makes sense.
They might also show it at the
show.
Yeah,
right?
They could also do it at the Detroit Auto Show in September, because the Detroit show in 2018 was where they originally unveiled the concept.
Maybe.
So I think it'll be fall. I think we're going to see it this year.
Yeah probably.
I think it'll probably be LA. I think you guys are right. But if it says Pebble Beach, I'm going to come back and say I was right.
I also said Pebble
Beach. But for now, I'm just going to agree with y'all.
You're betting $1. Okay, go ahead.
$1. That's what's going to be available.
$1.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll be back next time. Bye.
Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.